Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. It's always a great opportunity to get together with you every day, and thank you for carving out some time with us today. Today, our focus is on how do we know if our decisions are wise ones, and how do we cultivate godly wisdom, because the two are related, and we have some wonderful insight ahead of us today as we dive into a new book called Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. It's the latest book from Pastor Bob Merritt. Bob has been senior pastor at Eaglebrook Church. It's a multi-site church in the Twin Cities area, six locations around the Twin Cities, attendance at about 20,000 on those campuses. And we're just honored to have some time with Bob. And we're looking forward to finding out about getting wise and making wise decisions. So, Bob, great to have you on with us. Thanks, first of all, for coming on.
Neil, thanks. It's always an honor to be with you and your listeners. I'm glad to spend some time today.
You know, we want to talk a little bit about, you know, wisdom. You know, the book is packed with great insight, but I'm wondering, you know, do we really believe that wisdom is the most valuable of all possessions? I mean, Proverbs talks about that, but it kind of seems like our society, we like, you know, riches and fame more, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, on the face of it, it doesn't seem like wisdom would be the most valuable possession. Our society really is after those things you mentioned, money and position and status, and those things get glamorized and lifted up everywhere we look. But I would suggest that oftentimes wisdom is the pathway to even those kinds of things. Not necessarily, but wisdom is the pathway to really to life in general, life in its fullness. You know, Solomon in Proverbs 8:35 says, those who find me, meaning wisdom, those who find me, he says, find life. And then he goes on to mention all the benefits in chapter 3, all throughout the book of Proverbs. But, you know, blessed is the person who finds wisdom. Wisdom is more profitable than silver, more profitable than gold. Wisdom is more precious than rubies. He goes on to say, long life is in her right hand, meaning wisdom. There's long life if you're a wise person. He goes on, in her hand are riches and honor. Pleasant are its ways. Her paths are peace. He's talking about wisdom. So all these benefits that come with wisdom, but you're right, on face value, it doesn't seem like wisdom is the most valuable of all possessions, but I would say it's the pathway to what all of us desire in life.
You know, you talk about that, you know, finding wisdom and you find life. It's interesting. Proverbs 2 talks about we have to dig for wisdom, kind of like mining for gold. And I've always, you know, wondered, I suppose maybe just because I'm a little lazy, but, you know, why doesn't it come without effort? I mean, is this something that if we don't dig for it, you know, we're not going to find it?
Well, you know, pursue wisdom, the Proverbs say, dig for it, you know, try to find it. If you do nothing else, make sure you get it. Anything good in life, I think, requires some effort. And this thing called wisdom is something that you just can't sit and hope that it drops into your mind or your heart. You really do have to pursue it. And I think the first thing is pursue it with God. I mean, ask God for wisdom. And how often do we actually do that? I try to ask God for wisdom every single day because he ultimately is the one who gives wisdom, the source of all wisdom. So there really is a pursuit and a humbling before him, saying, God, I need this, and will you help me find it?
You know, you're talking about asking God for wisdom every day. Is this something, I mean, this book is really full of a lot of personal illustrations. You've been, you know, pretty open about that, and of course in your preaching as well. But is this something that has been an issue for you and said, you know, I want to really dive into this, and this has been a passion or an area where I've seen that I really have some needs?
Well, I think it's something that's grown on me. But, you know, going back early in my life, Neil, I read the book of Proverbs over and over as a teenager, as a young person. It's got 31 chapters, and so read one chapter a day, and you can get through it in a month. And then I just start over again. And as I just kind of grew up with the book of Proverbs, it made a whole lot of sense. You know, avoid this if you want your life to go well, do this if you want your life to go well. Yeah, and so it's something that actually I grew up with and fell in love with and began living my life according to really what the Proverbs were teaching. And, you know, I think my life has gone fairly well. I've made mistakes and I've had some real heartaches in my life, but as I see the teachings of the scriptures, in fact, especially in Proverbs, it really does give a great direction for life.
I was thinking, you know, sometimes I wonder if people look at something that has, you know, spiritual implication, that they say, well, it can't be practical, or, you know, that the spiritual has to be something other than just, you know, simple things about, you know, watching your money or your, you know, your morality, those kinds of things. But I mean, that clearly the Bible is full of practical wisdom too, isn't it?
Well, the Bible speaks to all of our issues, all of the things that we as humans face in life. And, of course, the primary one is relationships, our relationship with God and our relationship with others. And, you know, I don't know about you, Neil, but when my relationships are going well with my spouse first, my children, my colleagues at work, my classmates, when my relationships are going well, my life seems to go well. When my relationships are going poorly, my life tends to go poorly. And you know, when you get into the Proverbs, it's relationally driven. It's talking about honesty. It's talking about revenge and anger and our speech, and all these things have to do with how we are relating to people. And so if we can get this relationship piece down with God first and then with the people that are around us in our life, things tend to go well, and we can carve out a really great life. So when you talk about, does the Bible speak to the practical issues in life? I mean, that's what the Bible is all about.
Bob, I'm interested in, just by way of definition, is education is not necessarily the same as wisdom, is it?
Well, they're not completely separate from each other, but there is definitely a difference between intelligence and wisdom. I think we all know of very smart people who have book knowledge but maybe aren't very wise. They have a lot of smarts, if you will, but have made some very, very poor decisions that have crippled them in some way, crippled their relationships or destroyed something in their life. And so I think it's real possible to be very intelligent, but at times not very wise. And so education certainly can help in the area of wisdom, but it's not everything. There's another piece to it.
But it's also more than common sense, though, too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, common sense, for example, if there's thin ice on a lake, your common sense would say, you know, maybe I shouldn't walk across it or drive my car across it. Most people have that common sense. But when it comes to other issues like, who should I date? Or if I'm falling in love, is this the person that I should maybe consider marrying someday? It takes more than common sense to figure that one out. And those are huge decisions, because those are relational things that will stay with us through our whole life. So you need a little bit more than common sense when it comes to decisions that just require more, yeah. Require more wisdom and discernment.
James 1:5 talks about, you know, if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. And I was just wondering, you know, before we kind of dive into some specifics in the book, is that a universal principle? So we talk about common sense. Is that like a common grace? God, you know, sends the rain on the just and the unjust. Does he just give wisdom, you know, freely to anyone?
Well, I think he can and certainly will and does. But, you know, like you said, James 5 says, if anybody lacks wisdom, he or she should ask God. And I think there, Neil, for me, there's a spirit of humility where I don't have life put together. I need help. And if I have this spirit of humility before God, God, I need you. And I am acknowledging today that you are the source of my life. You are the source of everything that's created. You are the source of knowledge and wisdom. And because you're the source, I need you, and I need you to give me that. And I think that spirit of humility is something that God is looking for, and will honor that. I mean, it seems like a simple thing, just ask God, but how many of us actually do that? I find that I need to do that every single day.
Bob Merritt's my guest today. We're talking about his latest book. It's called Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. It's published by Baker. Bob has been senior pastor at Eagle Brook Church. It's a multi-site church in the Twin Cities area, 6 locations since 1991. And we're happy to have Bob along. In fact, he has a, I'm going to ask him in a moment about, he has a PhD from Penn State University. We'll talk a little about that, education and wisdom. We're going to dive into some of the specifics. We'll talk about, you know, family and relationships and money and parenting, all those things coming up as we continue here on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected today with Pastor Bob Merritt from Eagle Brook Church in the Twin Cities area. It's a multi-site church in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, one of the largest churches in the country. And Bob has written a new book out just a couple months ago called Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. And I think all of us realize when we make bad decisions, we want to learn how to make good decisions. And we're going to dive in more about wisdom. But Bob, and one of the things that you're you have a PhD from Penn State, which is not necessarily typical for a pastor. I mean, obviously you have a SEM degree as well, but talk about the value of an education at a secular university.
Yeah, first of all, I kind of had a little career before then, so I was older when I went back to school, Neil. I was 31 years old when I went to Penn State. And I think that's important to point out because I think a lot of parents kind of some parents make the mistake of just sending their 18 or 19 year old son or daughter off to a secular university like that, thinking that they're going to get this great education and everything's going to be fine. And what they find is that it's really a godless setting in many ways. It's very liberal leaning. God is not a part of the conversation if you are found out to be a Christian or a person who pursues faith. You're often viewed as being naive or weak, not very intelligent, and so your faith really comes under attack. You'll be exposed to everything under the sun. Hooking up is normal. Partying starts on Thursday nights. I saw, I rode the bus to school to Penn State when I was there from my apartment, and hangovers were typical on Monday morning. Students could hardly walk onto the bus. I mean, this is the scene in secular university today. It's quite sad, I would say. But as a 31-year-old student, I had a little life behind me, and I was a little bit more mature. And so what that education did for me is it helped me understand the secular mindset. It helped me understand really what the world was like. So and how that played into my own development as a pastor and leader is, you have to understand culture in order to effectively engage it. And it just was a tremendous 3 years of education. I didn't learn, as is the case with college and university setting, you learn more about life than you do about book knowledge. And that was the case for me, though, during those 3 years.
You talk about the culture today on the campus, and certainly that seems to be sort of the leading edge, but it really is rampant in our society. And Solomon, the book of Proverbs, talks an awful lot about sexual immorality and, the dangers of adultery. And let's start there. I mean, why is it that we need to spend so much time on this to get this right?
It's a difficult topic today because sexuality and relating has really, all of the mores that some of us grew up with, all of the standards, all of the norms have been eroded and abolished. And so even to mention, that maybe you shouldn't engage in premarital sex is laughed at. Is like, well, what rock are you living under? I mean, this isn't the real world. And yet, if you look at it and study it, when we erode and don't follow God's ideal for relating between men and women sexually, all sorts of bad things come from that. So Proverbs, for example, in Proverbs 7 talks about this seductive woman who is leading this young man away. And the writer in 22 says, all at once he follows her like an ox going to slaughter or like a deer stepping into a noose. And all of a sudden, this arrow pierces his liver, and he's like a bird darting into a snare. And then he concludes, his little knowing it will cost him his life. Well, you know, those are all descriptive ways of saying, avoid that. Avoid walking into this relationship without the commitment of marriage. Avoid the scene of hooking up on campus. Avoid having sex with just anybody, anywhere, anytime, because there's consequences to that. And we can talk more about that if you want.
But sure. Well, in fact, maybe just to follow up, it's one thing to say avoid that, but we probably have to make wise, positive decisions too then, so that because the natural flow of culture and you know, our sin nature is going to pull us that direction. So if we want to make wise choices, how do we do that in this area of sexuality and purity?
Well, I think, first of all, just having a conversation about what are the benefits to being pure and what are the consequences to not. You know, I have conversations every week, Neil, with people at church after church or who have been in our services, and they come up in tears and brokenness. And as you peel away the onion of their life, layer after layer after layer, it all goes back to just carelessness in the area of sexuality and relating. And if you start your life out as a teenager, 17, 18, 19 years old, and you begin engaging in impure relating with the opposite sex, that's going to stay with you. It's going to bleed into, if you do eventually get married, first of all, you have this history of relationships that you have shared intimacy with, the most intimate part of who we are, sexuality, gone to bed with person after person after person. You bring that into your marriage, and there's all kinds of baggage, all kinds of memory, all kinds of regret and brokenness and comparisons that you bring to that situation. It almost sets your marriage up for disaster right out of the gate. Now, is there healing and forgiveness and restoration if that's been the past and pattern? Absolutely, through Christ there is. But I would advocate, don't go down that road to begin with. If you have gone down that road, stop and repent of that and begin anew today, because you don't want to set your entire life up based upon a past that's just filled with wreckage and regret and brokenness and bad memories through all this careless relating.
And you also address the importance of wise friends, because clearly that's a part of it, right? I mean, he who walks with the wise grows wise. I mean, if we're hanging in the wrong crowd, it's mom was right. It's not gonna do us any good.
Well, your friendships are everything. The tough part today is that it's so difficult to find good and godly friends. But they exist and they're out there. You have to search a little bit, and you know, be the kind of person you want to be a friend with. So if you want to attract good and godly friends, make sure you're that kind of person as well. But yeah, it's difficult. I mean, they say that it's difficult to rise above your closest friends. So as you look around who your friends are, how high quality are they? How godly are they? Because it's very difficult to rise above the quality of your closest friends. Very important to have great friends.
I'm thinking that there's probably people that, you know, are listening now that maybe parents are concerned about their kids' friends, and you know, kids aren't necessarily willing to listen to advice. I guess maybe that goes back to the issue of humility, right? We have to be willing to allow others to pour into our lives, and you know that whether it's, you know, good choices or you know, good friends, that
right.
there's outside influence that can help us.
Right, right. Yeah, one of the things that my wife Laurie and I did with our children growing up, especially as they got in their teen years, but even before then, was we made sure that we exposed them to other godly men and women and other who also had good kids. And so a lot of those people we found in our church. It's great to have a great church life where you find people like that. But I made sure that my son, for example, was around people like, you know, Billy Butters, who's a wonderful Christian man, came out of the hockey world. Pete Hagstrom, a wonderful Christian man here. Brian Hagseth, who's activities director over at Centennial High School. These were godly men, godly friends that I made sure We're on canoe trips with my son and me. We're in the basketball court with my son and me. I made sure that we surrounded our kids with other godly parents, other godly people that they respected, and they could actually reinforce or even give a message to our kids that maybe they weren't so receptive to their mom and dad, but they would certainly listen to someone else. And they saw godliness and goodness modeled in these other people. So it wasn't just my wife and me. It's critical that we had other godly men and women in our kids' lives surrounding them. Outside of the soccer team or outside of the basketball team, people that we almost hand-selected from our church or from a godly environment.
And I'm sure if we, and I know you've written about it in the book, Get Wise, too, that there are some traits of those that are foolish. I mean, we probably don't always define it, but there are some characteristics that say, you know, this person's probably not very wise, and avoid them.
Yeah. You know, we're all, I have the ability to be a fool at times. I can be very foolish. But there's a difference between, you know, acting like a fool sometimes and being a fool. And Proverbs is very hard on fools. You know, Solomon at one point says, don't even talk to a fool because they'll discard the discernment of your words. They'll trash your words. They'll harm you in some way. So it's important to differentiate and to discern. Is this person, did they just do a foolish thing, or are they truly a fool? Someone who I should avoid. So, for example, how do you know if it's a foolish person, traits of a fool? Proverbs 29:11 says, fools give full vent to their rage. So fools are always angry at something. Typically, they're mad. Fools have a toxic tongue is another trait. Proverbs 23 says, every fool is quick to argue. So they have a toxic tongue. When you talk to them, they say things that tend to hurt you. Fools never apologize. Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool seems right to them. They never say they're sorry. They never admit they're wrong. So that's another key trait. Fools hate knowledge and truth. Proverbs 18:2 says, fools find no pleasure in understanding. So they just don't want to learn. They don't want to grow. Fools repeat their patterns. Proverbs 26:11, a dog returns to his vomit. So fools repeat their folly. There's this pattern, this repetition. And so these are traits, Neil, of a fool that really, if you want your life to go well, you want to avoid people like that. Now, obviously, as Christians, we have a responsibility to share our faith and get to know people and try to be a great influence. But you have to make sure you have enough maturity in your life to be able to handle this foolish person. And for me, man, I guess I try to avoid fools who are unwilling to learn, don't have a soft spirit, and just tend to hurt you.
Getting some wise advice today from Pastor Bob Merritt, talking about his book, Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. Bob Merritt's pastor of the Eagle Brook Church. It's a multi-site church with 6 locations around the Twin Cities area. And we're going to talk more with Bob in just a moment as we continue here on Connecting Faith. To Connecting Faith, I'm Neil Stavem, and on the phone today with me is Bob Merritt. Bob is pastor of Eagle Brook Church. It's a multi-site church with 6 locations around the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and the weekly attendance at 20-plus thousand or so. And Bob has written a new book here just out a couple months ago called Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. And we're learning about that, and it's based on the insight of Proverbs and some of the wise sayings there. It's interesting, Bob. It seems like some of the Proverbs are sort of maybe paradoxical. And are these Proverbs are always true? Can we sort of count on if it says this, that that's it's a blanket promise?
Yeah, so, and I would say that the Proverbs are pithy. They're written in a way that, like you say, sometimes paradoxical in kind of a poetry form in some ways. a proverb is something that when you follow it, it generally is what happens. So, you know, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they are old, they will, you know, return to that. That's a general principle that usually happens, that when you train your children correctly, you know, they may fall off the path for a while, but when they are older, they'll return to it. Generally speaking, that happens, but it's not always the case. So what you're saying is, or what you're suggesting is true, Neil, that Proverbs are directives in life. They are sayings or proverbial truths that if you follow them, generally speaking, this is how things will turn out.
And of course, that verse maybe is one that's caused some challenge for many families too. Say, well, my child hasn't come back yet, but right. I know that you address that in the book, so that, you know, part of it has to do with the word to train, right? Maybe just explain a little bit more about when Proverbs 22 says, "Train up a child." What does that mean?
Well, you have to be a person of who lives life rightly yourself. I mean, it's very difficult to teach or train children how to live correctly, the difference between right and wrong, how to handle relationships, if I as the parent am not living correctly. I think one of the biggest difficulties in life today, one of the biggest problems in families, are that parents are misbehaving. Parents are not handling their sexuality correctly. They're, what they view in the movie theater, or how they treat other people, or how they treat their money and so forth. And so, you know, we can teach and try to train our kids until we're blue in the face. But if we as parents aren't actually living life the way God wants us to, our children never will. I shouldn't say never, but it's going to be difficult. My son David has often said, "Dad, it's not so much what you and Mom said to us. We certainly listened to you, and we certainly respected, for the most part, what you were telling us how to live. What really made the difference," he's told me this number of times, "what really made the difference is you actually lived it. So you led us to church. We saw you reading the Bible and praying. You kept your marriage pure." I mean, that was huge for him. Very difficult for a teenager to relate to the opposite sex well if parents are misbehaving or dropping the ball in that area. So training really has to do, Neil, more so with how you're living your own life, and certainly verbalizing that to your children. But you really have to be living it yourself.
Which, of course, I mean, living a great life really is about making great decisions every day. I guess that, you know, talk about the subtitle of the book. I mean, is it possible to make sort of great decisions? Or, I mean, some decisions maybe aren't that significant. You know, do you wear the blue socks or the red socks today? Whatever. So,
Yeah, you know, some of the decisions we make, and we all make decisions, dozens of them every single day, and I think my socks match today. They do.
Good.
And they don't always match, but I mean, those are no-brainers. Sure. And those are insignificant decisions. But there are a few decisions in life, and I think a few decisions we make every single day that really matter. And over a period of a lifetime or a period of several years, begin to build up and either lead us down a path of success and well-being, or lead us down a path of failure and heartache. I'll give a story real quickly, and you may have heard this before, but when I was 17 in high school, I was sitting in study hall in a big auditorium. We were all separated, students, the teacher separated us, and we were just sitting in study hall in the auditorium, and a very lovely, beautiful girl in our class walked past me. I was sitting on the end of the aisle, dropped a note in my lap, and essentially said, "Anytime, any place, I'm yours." And I knew this girl, her reputation and so forth, and I knew what that meant. That she was inviting me to have a relationship with her, actually a sexual relationship with her, anytime. And for a 17-year-old kid to have that dropped in his lap is unbelievable. And I was able, though, to not follow or not go down that path, mainly because I had been reading the Proverbs and been familiar with. I had preloaded my heart and my mind with God's truth along those lines. Had I done that, had I followed that invitation, I know for a fact that I would not have been able to date and eventually end up marrying Laurie Thompson, who was also in my class. She was the one who I actually wanted to have a relationship with, and I didn't know where it was going to lead, not a sexual one at that point, but just a boyfriend, girlfriend. But so those are decisions that come along the way that either set you up for a great future or a difficult future. Proverbs 2:9, talking about wisdom, when you follow it, he says, then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. And so, you know, all of us are on a path in life, and every one of those paths has a destination. And whatever path that we're on, whether it's a good path or a bad path, has a destination. So the decisions we make every single day, you know, they might not seem big in the moment. They might seem trivial. They might seem, this doesn't really matter, a little indiscretion here, a little lack of judgment there. But it builds up, and they begin forming paths that lead to an outcome. And so that's why every single day we need to be aware of the decisions that we make. And, you know, this verse in Proverbs 2:10 that says, wisdom will enter your heart. You want it to become almost automatic, innate, so that when you see something or a temptation, you almost automatically know what to do. And you don't really have to think about it. It's just there because you have been down this path of trying to follow God's wisdom.
I like, as you said, you preloaded your mind with Scripture, and that, you know, those kinds of advanced decisions help us make the right decisions when we need to. It's interesting that Proverbs says so much about the heart too. I was thinking Proverbs 4:23, you know, guard your heart above all else. I mean, that this is serious stuff, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, Proverbs 4:23 is what you're talking about. Above all else, guard your heart, for it's out of your heart flows the wellspring of life. There's three parts of that verse that are really important. The first one is, you know, at all costs, guard it, protect it. So I really have to be careful, Neil, about, for example, what kind of movies I watch, what kind of music I listen to, but movies in particular. I've got to guard my heart from certain scenes, from certain images, from certain storylines that are projected on the screen today. I'm shocked, actually, what R-rated movies are showing our children today, and even parents and adults who think nothing of a steamy, hot sexual scene. I spoke just recently about 50 Shades of Grey, and I just made this bold statement that no one should expose their heart to that movie. No one should. And if you're a Christ follower, I mean, absolutely not. And if you've already seen the movie, maybe you'll be more discerning next time. But those are images that and thoughts and suggestions that can enter your mind and seep into your heart and kind of breaks down, has a tendency or a chance to break down your discernment or break down your ability to make a wise decision. So everything starts with the heart. Whatever's going on inside my heart, whatever thoughts are going on inside my heart, really drive my life. So Proverbs says, guard your heart, for out of your heart, you know, flows your life.
Bob Merritt's my guest today. Bob is a pastor at Eagle Brook Church. It's a multi-site church, 6 locations around the Twin Cities area. And he's authored a couple books. His latest is called Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. It's from Baker Books. And we're going to talk in just a moment about the wisest decision you could ever make. And I want to just encourage you to stay tuned as we continue our conversation here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We've been talking a lot about wisdom today, about how to make great decisions every day. That's the subtitle of Bob Merritt's book called Get Wise. Bob's pastor of Eagle Brook Church. It's a multi-site church in the Twin Cities area and has thousands of people attending regularly each week. Significant impact in the upper Midwest. Bob, I know that Easter season is an important time for every church, and certainly at Eagle Brook. And I'm wondering if maybe you can just talk about, we've been talking about getting wise. There's probably one decision that is the wisest of all. I mean, Proverbs 1:7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So let's talk about that most fundamental decision.
Yeah, the fear of the Lord doesn't mean we shake in our boots in his presence or we're just afraid of him. It really, I think, is the idea of a holy reverence before the Lord, a humility that I need you, that Jesus, I need you. So, yeah, the wisest decision any human being could ever make, Neil, is to open their heart to God through a relationship with Jesus Christ and acknowledge that he is Lord. I mean, Jesus said, I am the way. He said, I am the truth, and I am the life. That's we live and move and have our being as we get to know who Jesus is, and he gives us his Holy Spirit who resides inside of us. If we can imagine that truth, that God's Spirit lives inside of us when we open our life to him, guiding us, helping us with this whole area of wisdom. He says, I am the way, I am the truth. Wisdom is really based on truth, the truth of who Jesus is, how he wants us to live. So I think it's really tough to be a wise person or to be a person of wholeness without Jesus in our lives. He is the source of life. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And so at Easter time, we celebrate that. We try to lead people into a relationship with God through faith in Christ, who broke the curse of sin and death. And that's the hope for all of us, you know.
You know, I'm sure you encounter people maybe regularly who they seem like on the surface they have success. I mean, they're wise in their maybe the way that they use their money or they're working hard or those things. But thinking, well, I don't really need, what part does God play in my life? What would you say to those?
Yeah, I mean, money's nice. Money's not a bad thing. Money's a good thing. We all need a certain amount of money, and a lot of people have more than other people. But I've encountered a lot of people, Neil, who are very well off. They have money. They have, quote-unquote, success. They have a lot of things, but something's missing. Sometimes there's a peace or a true joy that's missing in their life. A lot of times I've noticed families who are very well off have difficulty raising their kids well. The kids are so kind of grew up with an entitled way, and oftentimes these children don't fare well. I know a lot of families who are well off financially, but whose kids have had to go through rehab and struggle with addiction and entitlement and so forth. And that's not every case, but the point is having money or having wealth or success, and that's fine. But if you don't have a great marriage, and if you don't have a great family, and if you don't have peace and joy, and if you don't have a purpose, a real true purpose in life, all the money in the world is really empty. And then there's this thing called death that we all face. And I'm getting older, and Neil, you're getting really old.
True.
Not really. But we all have this finality to our lives, and we all have to ask this question, then what? And what value is my wealth, and what value is my life? And again, money's not bad. Success isn't bad. Those can be good things. But ultimately, what does my life mean? Where am I going? What does it matter? And do I have a plan for when my life ends? And every day, people's lives end, every single day. And one day, it's going to be me. And I have to know what my plan is.
Hopefully those words will settle on someone listening today who's perhaps been just wrestling with that and saying, you know, where is the peace and the joy and purpose? It's interesting, you know, Proverbs has a lot to say. We sort of just mentioned money, but interesting that Proverbs often talks about, you know, how we need to be stewards of it, right? That we and that generosity seems sort of counterintuitive, but when we refresh others, we are refreshed ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, Proverbs 3:9 talks about money, and right out of the gate, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first part of your income. And so am I doing that? Am I trusting God by giving him a part of my income every single, you know, paycheck? For us, 10% goes right back to what God is doing, and it's really a trust thing. It's really, God, I want to honor you with this. God really doesn't need my money, but it's something that God asks of me to keep him first in my life. So he says, you know, honor me with your wealth. And then verse 10 says, then, this key word, then, you know, your barns will be filled to overflowing. Your vats will brim over with new wine. In other words, then your life will be full. And there's this God factor, Neil, that I think many people underestimate, that, you know, God asks us to do some of these things as an evidence of our trust in him. And money is something that is so close to us, something that we guard, and, you know, this is my money, this isn't, you know, stay out of my business. But God asks us to release some of that as a form of trust and faith in him. And it doesn't make sense, but God promises that when we do that, things begin to happen in our lives, and then our lives become full. And I think sometimes God is just waiting for some of us to trust him in that. That we underestimate that there's a God factor at play in life, that when we trust him in these things, he honors it. So, yeah, he asks us to be generous. He asks us to give, really to soften up our hearts toward him.
You know, I'm sure that you've, as you've mentioned in the book talks about too, you know, opportunities you've had to visit and counsel with people. Are there several areas that tend to sort of rise to the top when we most need to get wise? Is it around relationships, or is it money, or maybe it's, you know, the tongue or work, or what seems to be, are there some common themes that you've encountered over the years?
Yeah, all of those. Again, we started the conversation today talking about relationships, but yeah, honesty, anger, our words. If I could control my tongue, I would be so much better off in life. I've done so much damage with just a word or a phrase that I used in a staff meeting or with my wife or my kids that I wish I could take back. And so, you know, Solomon just warns us about our words. One of the chapters is wise feet. And oftentimes I counsel people, and they'll come with this baggage of wreckage in their life, and they'll say, what should I do? And I'll probe a little bit, and I'll say, well, where do you spend time? Where do you go? And I think we can avoid a lot of problems in life by just avoiding certain places, certain people. Where do you allow your feet to take you? You know, or my fingers, you know, what do I allow myself to look at on the internet? Sometimes it's just saying, you know, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to put myself in that position where something could happen. Early in my life, I knew that, you know, pornography was a real temptation for me. And so while I traveled through airports, everybody knows that in the airport bookstores and shops and so forth, there's a section of magazines that are kind of up in the back. Yeah. And I knew that one of the things I had to do in an airport every time I traveled was never enter a shop like that. I just couldn't. I had to kind of force myself to walk on the other side of the aisle and just keep going. I didn't want to put myself in a place or a position or an area where I knew that I was weak. And so I would just avoid it. So wise feet, you know, where are you going? What are you doing? is a counsel that I give people.
You know, many have probably used Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 as a life verse, and maybe that's kind of a good way to wrap up our time together. Just say a word about the wisdom of that passage in Proverbs.
trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't rely on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. That happens to be my life verse. I cling to that verse, Neil, to trust in him with all of my heart, trying not to lean on my own understanding, which means that whenever I come, every single day that I come to work, I do open up the Bible and I read a chapter or two out of the Bible, and that's because I can't lean on my own understanding. I need to lean on God's word, and I need to be reminded every single day of what God is saying to me. So I start my day that way. Trust in him. Don't lean on my understanding. In all my ways, just acknowledge him. God, I want to acknowledge you in my life, my marriage, my work. I need you. And then this great promise, he will make your paths straight. And I found that to be true. God has made my paths straight as I submit to him and acknowledge him in everything that I do. I certainly make mistakes. I'm a sinner. But this verse is absolutely true, and I love it. It has helped me all through life.
Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 would be a good one to commit to memory if you haven't already. We're talking with Bob Merritt, who's a pastor of Eagle Brook Church, about his book, Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. Bob, certainly leading a church of, 20,000 plus is no small task. How can we pray for you and our pastors today as they need God's wisdom as well?
Well, thanks for asking for that, Neil. I really need the prayers of faithful people. I'm very human, very weak. My job actually scares me to death to think that I'll be standing in front of a lot of people every weekend, many people just hoping to hear something from God. And so I need to hear from God first. And my prayer this morning actually was, Lord, you know who's going to be here this weekend. And you know every single person, you know their needs, you know what they're facing, you know what's got them concerned and afraid. And so please speak to me, God. Give me what I need. And so I think it's difficult to be a pastor today. And I think it's a really difficult job. It's difficult for everyone, no matter who you are, but I just really covet the prayers of anybody who's out there listening, and I thank God for those of you who do pray, and I know that many of you do.
Well, our thoughts and prayers with you, Bob, and thank you for the wise words you've given us just in our conversation today here on Connecting Faith. The book that we've been referencing is called Get Wise, Make Great Decisions Every Day. It's from Baker Books, and Pastor Bob Merritt from Eagle Brook Church with us today. Bob, blessings to you, and wish you great decisions day by day.
Thanks so much, Neil. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening in our conversation today about making wise choices and good decisions. The book called Get Wise from Bob Merritt. We've got a couple of copies available, and we'll give those away here at the end of the show. Just do an email drawing today. If you go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, there's an email link right there. You just fill out your contact information and submit that, and we'll draw several winners for the copy of this great resource, Practical Wisdom from Proverbs, thanks to Bob Merritt. Get Wise, a couple of copies to give away. Again, you can sign up on email, myfaithradio.com, click on the Connecting Faith show page, and then fill out information there in the email link. And I want to encourage you to listen tomorrow as we spend some time with another noted pastor, speaker, and author. David Platt joins us tomorrow on Connecting Faith as we talk about his latest book, Counterculture. We live in a world that's full of a lot of challenges, and David Platt has some great insights for us about countering culture. We'll get that tomorrow on Connecting Faith. And remember, a week from today, our Faith Radio Share begins. And we thank you in advance for your partnership and support. This listener-supported ministry. You can get details about that on our website as well at myfaithradio.com. Thank you for listening to Connecting Faith.